Good morning. Thank you for all your efforts so far. A couple of days into the 7-day session now, and in the meat of it, so to speak. So perhaps I would hope that we are somewhat settled down, settling in, and now really is the opportunity to truly deepen and to take care of whatever it is that brought you here, brought you to this practice to begin with. 7-day session is enough time, plenty of time, a week long, even a day, even a period of Zazen, to do what each of us needs to do. Thank you to Ted for his talk yesterday. Like, sometimes I'm driving back from LA and it says, and it's the radio hour, it's a TED talk. I'm like, oh yeah. Time for a TED talk. So appreciated that yesterday. I wanted to bring up a koan case from the Book of Equanimity. This is case 3, an invitation for the patriarch. Preface to the assembly. By the activity existing before even a hint of this kalpa, a blind turtle faces the fire. By the phrase that's transmitted outside the scriptures, a mortar's rim sprouts a flower. Tell me, is there something to receive, maintain, read, and recite? Main case. Attention. The ruler of a country in eastern India invited the 27th ancestor, Hanyatara, for a mid-morning meal. The ruler asked him, "Why don't you read the sutras?" The ancestor replied, "This poor follower of the way, when breathing in, does not dwell in the realm of skandhas, and when breathing out, is not caught up in the many externals. Always do I thus turn 100,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, I think there where he says 100,000,000,000,000,000,000 rolls, we could probably say innumerable, like we do in the meal chant. You know, a number beyond the count. During Sashin, of course, in the sutra chanting service that we practice, indulging in chanting sutras, then the name of this particular ancestor is chanted, Hanyutara. So all the lineages of Zen will go back through Hanyutara and before. Hanyutara was the teacher of Bodhidharma. So the first, credited as the first ancestor of Zen in China. But this takes place in the previous generation, somewhere in eastern India, Hanyutara. It said that Hanyutara was an orphan, didn't have parents, lost parents at a very early age, and in fact it said he didn't know what his name was. So people referred to him as this young man. I mean, he picked a name and was later given a name too. So, an unusual upbringing in that sense, and to be born in that way. But perhaps with, you know, our practice in terms of not becoming overly identified with this name and rank, who we are, maybe a leg up too. Not even to have a name. Maybe a little more difficult not to be so identified with one's name if it was, you know, Clinton or Bush or something like that. And then to be born in that era in India as a practitioner, in this lineage, you know, the fact of impermanence would surely be very apparent. Although, is it not apparent now? You know, our culture may approach things as if it is not a fact. Everything designed around youth, remaining young. Very little discussion or talk really about death or preparation for death. You know, my partner Yushin is currently working in hospice, interning in hospice. She was surprised by how many people it's coming as a complete surprise to. People are shocked. And yet these marks of impermanence, it's all around. You know, I was just wrapping up work in the office, and just as I was shutting things down, a fly walked along the top of the monitor and then just fell off dead on the keyboard. And I just blew it like, just kind of blew it on the floor. And I thought, well, in a casual action, and yet a life extinguished, you know. Several million years of evolution in design, and then just dies, just like that. The fact of impermanence. And coming into Sashin, a beginning, a middle, an end, most likely. Now, and Roshi had written an article just recently, and I read it through, and he was recounting giving a talk, and you talked on he mentioned impermanence, and somebody said, what about this concept of impermanence? And he said, it's not a concept. Have you looked in the mirror lately? Is that not so? that's what we deal with. You know, the Buddha said, thirst, see the emptiness, then study cause and effect. Ted brought up yesterday this word, perhaps a tricky word, emptiness, and the first couple of lines of the Heart Sutra, Avalokiteshvara, doing deep prajna paramita, clearly saw the emptiness of all these five conditions. These five skandhas, the realm of form, sensation, perception, conception, and consciousness. That goes some way to making up our experience of the world. This ruler, local ruler, invited Venerable Hanyatara for a mid-morning meal. The ruler asked him, why don't you read the sutras? And he could have said, I'm eating. Yeah, right. It's not time for sutra chanting. That would be one answer. But he's picking at him here and asks him, who is this monk? This teacher. Perhaps he has a reputation. Why don't you read the sutras? And he says, this poor follower of the way, these koans are not, they don't add extra words in. Yeah, anything that wasn't important, I'm sure, was edited over the long centuries, over time, taken out. So really everything in here is instructive. When asked that question, What kind of Buddhist are you? You're not chanting sutras. So it's this poor follower of the way. It's good to look at that and see what does it point at. You can look at that from the standpoint of Zazen, in session, when we sit. Are we poor? Or do we have things? Are we carrying things along with us? Bringing our possessions along? Holding on to things? Zazen really requires our entering in without the extra baggage. The baggage of thought and construction and identity of our life. You know, really it's like taking a long flight. We can begin session, you can check your baggage. It'll be waiting at the destination on Sunday. You know, don't carry anything forward when sitting. That's really the shift in sitting, in Zazen, in these periods that we have, one after the other. You know, as we've settled down now, perhaps a lot of the more kind of banal thought about this and that, that surface choppy thinking about these few things begins to fall away, begins to drop off somewhat. And then we're faced really with a decision point, faced with an opportunity. If we take up this thinking about this and that, and then try and work our life out on the cushion, then that's what we're doing. We're planning, scheming. It may bear certain results, it may not, but it is not Zazen. That's not our work, to work things out between the ears. As Hanyatara says, this poor follower of the way, when breathing in, does not dwell in the skandhas, does not dwell in forms, does not dwell in sensation, perception, conception, or consciousness. Not does not experience or denies the existence of, but does not dwell. Master Dogen said, in a line that always stuck with me, Zazen is unconstructedness in stillness. We cherish upright sitting. It's in stillness, in quiet, then this nature is most apparent, can be seen not just with the eye, can be seen with the heart, can be experienced. Or if we continue to construct the identity, if we continue to chew over, you know, for myself, I have the same five thought patterns going on. It's not particularly imaginative. It's quite boring. But if we continue to add to that, always trying to work, picking over things, then we miss. We miss this one. And then become confused. Confused about maybe what Zen is, practices, what our life is. To be unconstructed is to cease to add or take anything away, but rather come into direct experience, whatever that experience, however that is appearing, with perception, conception, consciousness. These things don't have to be problems. Thinking isn't a problem. Often we make that a big one in our practice. You know, how we approach or how we work with thinking. The thinking is just thinking. But we cherish thinking over other things. When we sit, I'd encourage, give your thinking no more value than the feeling in your feet. Take no position there. Don't dwell there, as Hanyatara says. But allow whatever this expression is, whatever expression we are, to be as it is, with a straight, reasonably straight back. Breathing in, breathing out. It occurs, whether it is noticed or not. As we chant that lineage, we see these people who have practiced in this way. But that's you. That's this one. The difference is whether it is realized or not. Sesshin is the work then of realization, making this birthright real. Otherwise, you know, a wonderful line like when Shakyamuni Buddha saw the morning star, said, I, all beings, the great earth, are the wisdom and virtue of the awakened one to thusness. If that's not this one, that's not you and I, then we call the founder a liar. Whatever is needed to close that gap. Close that gap in this time, now. Really use sesshin to become intimate, to realize intimacy. As Ted reminded yesterday, you know, the schedule is a great friend. You know, I haven't always thought that. You know. But I mean, really good friends give it to you straight. It's not always about ease. You know, but the schedule is a friend. Whatever it is that we are doing, whatever it is time to do. When sitting, then, you know, and I even hate to say the words, when sitting, just sit. But in that just sitting, whatever your practice, our practice is, do that practice. Be that practice fully. Look for anything else. Hanyatara keeps it very simple here. Breathing in, breathing out. That's enough. What are we looking for? It's more than enough. Koryo Roshi, Maizumi Roshi's Rinzai teacher, would still count breaths as a practice. After becoming very accomplished in the tradition, becoming a teacher, and return to counting breaths. Breathing in, breathing out. If we're looking for some peak experience to come, not that experiences do not occur, but if we chase, if we look for something that isn't here, then it's carrot and a donkey. Looking for something else. Rather, the backward step that looks here. And you can really see then, you really look, how much effort is really required? Where does the effort go in Zazen? This poor follower of the way, He doesn't need rank, title. All of these things, again, are subject to this truth of impermanence. Yeah, we put so much emphasis into the forms, into things, always creating things, and yet we know in our hearts that all things change, decay, disappear. So it is always a risky investment, doomed to fail ultimately. Then how important then to turn our attention and illumine that which doesn't change. Illumine that one which doesn't move. That doesn't move through all these activities of the schedule. What is it that is always thus, always the same? In questions like that, when they bring it up, they stop the mind dead. The brain, rather, that always understands from a distance, always looking at something, wanting to work it out. That's just how we're wired. That is why we don't use that lens of discursive thinking to approach in this way. It has, of course, it has its myriad wonderful uses, but it is not applied in sitting, in Zen, in Zazen. When I breathe out, Anyatara says, I'm not caught up in the many externals. In this case, being dealt with in terms of so perceived, the so-called internal experiences first, these sense perceptions, conceptions of mind, and then breathing out, also not caught up in the externals, or the perceived so-called externals. You know, this is a typical way we carry forward this sense of I in a world of things. And this is what we dissolve. You know, this practice is a dissolving agent for that construction. Yeah. It's a useful construction when applied appropriately, but it's the only construction, and we apply it to all things, it results in dissatisfaction, and we turn to a spiritual practice to return to our original nature, which is always unperturbed, always free. We look out, we see this world of externals and appearances. If we believe in them, if we make those things hard facts, we buy into that, we fix that separation and call it real, then the self shrinks down to this bag of bones. Then we're, you know, the fly walking on the monitor. But if we experience and really truly look deeply into the nature of self, you see, you can't find it. You can't find the edges. You look in another's eyes, and it's you. It's this one. The one before the name. What an extraordinary thing. So easily obscured. We obscure it with the conditioning of our life, so that there's no room in our heads for anything else. But we really, do we not see that when we sit in this way, supported by the container of, you know, the gift of like-minded people, in a container has proven effective to do this, that those lines between self and other fall away? And you look deeper and deeper. Who is this? What is this? What is this life? Is that clear? Am I satisfied? Is it enough? Breathing in, breathing out. A life that includes each one of us here, a plane going across the sky, mountains, trees. When you really look, it is an extraordinary fact. You know, I sometimes have that experience where leaving at night and it's dark and I'm going to walk down to my place and I'm thinking about this and that, chewing over a few things, you know. And you look up and you see Orion or something in the sky. And it's like a little slap on the cheek, you know? How vast this is. Prone to making things small. And Hanyatara, of course, you know, and he has great confidence here. He says that, always do I thus turn 100,000,000,000,000,000,000 rolls of sutras. It's not about finding, it's not the words hold something special, like hold the secret. You know, if I can just crack the code of the Heart Sutra. Yeah. This is the Heart Sutra, in expression. When it's written down, it appears in words in the sutra book. But this is the living sutra. So, you know, if we chop and change and demean the experience that we're having, okay, now it's work practice. Yeah. I want to do this. Or raise up another experience that we're having. Oh, now I'm feeling expansive and very chill in my Zazen. If we cherish one above another and then start to look to push away those things that we don't like and pursue those things that we do. It's like the fundamental teachings of Buddhism that the Buddha brought up. You know, as human beings, we are prone to attachment and aversion. And that's fine. To be human, to be prone in that way. But if we're asleep within that, we just follow along on the wheel. But to be awake is to see that mechanism in action and to have choice. To see the freedom to turn a different way. If something is causing suffering, if something is not working, you don't have to keep walking down the same road over and over. First, as the Buddha said, you see the emptiness. Or look, realize what is intrinsic. And then study, because then you see how we screw it up. Says in the verse here, a hero's strength tears through nested enclosures. So we're all heroes. Could be heroic, have a heroic session. being resilient, going forward with each activity, you know, to really to like jump in, to really fully inhabit that, whatever that it is, raise it up to the best of our ability, go a little further. And tear through nested enclosures. That's what, you know, again, something that we are prone to do. We make nests. A definition of who and what we are in our life. The things we like to do, not like to do. Our political persuasion. You know, whether we like to eat organic or not. Whatever these things are, if they become hardened, and beliefs which we cling to, they become nested enclosures. And then when life does not correspond to what to our creation, we suffer. We can illumine that. In our Zazen. And I'm not just talking about Zazen in here and on the cushion. Za means to sit. Sit dhyana, sit zen. But that zazen then pervades all activity. And we have this skillful means where when we finish sitting, we move and slowly walk. What is different? Is there an entering or leaving there? And blood begins to flow a bit and the legs come back online and we walk fast. What changed? Is it a different life? And so on. And we leave the Buddha Hall. We can have the whole world be the Buddha Hall. Not, you get out of here and then, okay, now, you know, the sacred part of the important stuff's done. I'll just get on with whatever in the same old ways. Better to have no escape. Not in a negative way. Whatever this present expression is, meet it directly. Welcome it. Welcome. Saying yes to what is. The alternative is to say no to what is. I encourage us, you know, if we're in this point in session, as kind of in the meat of it, it's a time to really double down. You know? To when we sit all the way down. Sit all the way down. Be a poor follower of the way. No need to carry anything forward. Anything that you you can't lose anything that you need here. Don't worry about carrying some forward, some understanding, or letting go of any delusion. Just sit down. Breathing in. Turn in the sutras. Breathe it out. Being an ordinary person. Being ordinary. let the extraneous constructions go, or see through the veil of that construction, becoming ordinary, then we really see everything is extraordinary. This is extraordinary. And in the blink of an eye, and it's, I know session is hard too. And if you're having a hard time, then please know that at the very least, you're helping everybody else by being here, by sitting. Yeah. It's not just about this one. But rather, it's about this one. Thank you for listening. We'll finish.